I want you to imagine that it's June 24th, 2011. Austin Hatch is a 16-year-old basketball player in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He's one of the elite players in all of America, even at the age of 16, a sophomore in high school. He has already been offered countless scholarships to play in college, and he has accepted one from his desired destination, the University of Michigan, with its coach, John Beilein. It was his lifelong dream. Austin is also a survivor of a small plane crash that happened in 2003, a private plane crash that killed his mother, his sister, and his brother. On that day in June of 2011, June 24th, Austin boarded his father's private plane to fly to Michigan, and just outside of Charlevoix, that plane crashed, killing his father and stepmother. Austin was severely injured and was in a coma for 8 weeks with a traumatic brain injury, and then had to go through extensive rehabilitation to simply talk, walk, or eventually play basketball again. And I read that at the beginning, the most he could walk was 6 inches at a time. He missed a year of high school because of this and had to reclassify to enter Michigan in the fall of 2014. Yes, John Beilein and the University of Michigan honored the scholarship that they had offered him in spite of his injuries. Beilein never wavered in his commitment to Austin. As a freshman on the basketball team, he got to play in 5 games. And in one game near the end of a game against Coppin State with Michigan way ahead, Beilein inserted him into the game in the last minute, and the other players on the team did everything they could to get him the ball so that he could maybe score and put up a shot. And with about 2 seconds left in the game, he tried a three-pointer and was fouled, and so he got to go to the free throw line where he made one of his 3 free throws. And so he is registered as having scored in a basketball game at the University of Michigan. The next year, he took a medical scholarship at U of M, which means that he would no longer be able to play basketball, but he would still be maintained as a student, and he was very focused on his academic career and wanted to complete that, and so he gave up his dream of basketball. 1 week ago today, on Sunday, February 18th, the University of Michigan had their final home basketball game of the year, and it was senior day, and they honored the 4 seniors on the team and Austin Hatch. Austin has been very vocal in his appreciation to the University of Michigan, but also to John Beilein, his coach, who cared more about this young man than he did about winning basketball games and getting another player to take that scholarship. And for me, this is a story about generosity. Typically, we think of generosity as something in which we're donating money to, or if we're helping out a friend who's sick. If you offer Mary help this week with her illness, probably that was an act of generosity on your part. Today, we're going to have a potluck with our server team. It's an act of generosity that people have brought food to share today. And so I'd like you to think of generosity as I talk today as something bigger than just how much money is in the basket up there or how much money the fellowship is collecting to maintain its stance as an organization. Generosity was the first of the temperami, or qualities of character, that Buddha taught his students to cultivate. The Buddha spoke about 3 kinds of giving: beggarly giving, which is friendly giving, and kingly giving, or the other two. Beggarly giving is when we give the least of what we have. We give what we don't really need, what we would never miss, what we might have otherwise thrown away. Friendly giving is when we give what we use and like, not our best, but what we can afford and might appreciate having as a gift that we too were receiving from another. Kingly giving is on a totally different order. It is when we give the very best of what we have, when we give more than we keep for ourselves, when we give more than we can afford, when we give with no expectation of reciprocity. In awakened awareness, we give because the joy of generosity far exceeds the paltry satisfaction of hoarding or displaying wealth. We give because this very life is a gift itself and wants to completely be used up. Those are words from Buddha. Let's look at some other words of generosity as well. We have a... We have also some information about what Jesus had to say in the Bible. And I think the reference is Luke 6:38. Give, says Jesus, and gifts will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be poured onto your lap. For whatever measure you deal out to others will be dealt out to you in return. And we've probably all heard that saying at one time or another, that what we give comes back to us, maybe threefold. Okay. In 2018, earlier this year, Massachusetts Mutual Life Insurance Company did a survey of 10,000 people in the United States. And their finding was that 88% of those people surveyed believed it is important to look out for one another. Acts of generosity. Many of us have had the opportunity of studying a little from the Course in Miracles. And the Course in Miracles has a course of text, a workbook for students, and there's a manual for teachers. And in the manual for teachers, the seventh lesson is on generosity. To the world, generosity means giving away in the sense of giving up. To the teachers of God, it means giving away in order to keep. In the clearest way possible and at the simplest of levels, the word means the exact opposite to the teachers of God and to the world. A teacher of God is generous out of self-interest. The teacher of God does not want anything he cannot give away, because he realizes it would be valueless to him by definition. What would he want it for? He could only lose because of it. He could not gain. Therefore, he does not seek what only he could keep, because that is a guarantee of loss. He does not want to suffer. Why should he insure himself pain? But he does want to keep for himself all things that are of God, and therefore his Son. These are things that belong to him. These he can give away in true generosity, protecting them forever for himself. A couple of months ago, I was playing around on the internet, and I discovered a video that was of interest to me. And it was a video of a man who wanted to know what would happen if he gave a homeless man $100. And so he got a film crew with him, and he found a man in Southern California, one of the cities in Southern California, and he took the $100 and he went up to the homeless man and he offered the homeless man the $100. And of course the man was taken aback. He was completely blown away. Didn't know what to do, and thanked him immensely, and actually couldn't stop thanking him as the man walked away from him. And the film crew was filming all of this, and so what they did then was they followed the man where he went with the $100. And they followed him down the sidewalk, and they followed him through the streets, and they saw him go into a convenience liquor store. And when he came out with two bags of groceries and no alcohol. And he took those bags of groceries, and he walked around to all of the other homeless people that he knew were around, and he gave them something that he had purchased with that money. And some was food, some was items of clothing, some were items of cleanliness, soap and shampoo and those kinds of things. And he gave everything away for what he had purchased with the $100, and he kept none of it for himself. And my guess might be that that would be the last thing you would think he would do. And so one of the things that I've learned about generosity over the time is that, as the case with Orrin Hatch, and maybe as the case with this man, that some people like to pay it forward. And if you haven't seen this movie, I would certainly recommend it to you. Pay It Forward. And it's a story about a little boy, I think in third or fourth grade, who's given an assignment by his teacher, and he has to find something that he can do to help people in the community, and he gets this idea of paying it forward. And so he encounters all of these different people in his life and gets each one of them to decide to pay something forward to the next person anonymously. And that's really the key, is to do it without a sense of getting something in return. So it's a very moving movie. It's not a happy ending, but it's a movie that you would probably enjoy. Some of you, I'm sure, when you were parenting, co-parenting, aunting and uncling, grandma and grandpa, grandma and grandpaing, I'm a papa, so I'm papaing, are familiar with the author Shel Silverstein. And maybe his most famous work is The Giving Tree, which is obviously a book about generosity. That the tree gave and gave and gave to the boy until it had nothing left to give, and it was immensely happy in that process. And so one of the things that I think is important to reflect upon for us is that many times, in spite of all this generosity that we see around us and that maybe we receive and that perhaps we're giving away to others in our own way, one of the things that the law of attraction has taught me is that, of course, what we focus on is what we get in return. And so if I'm giving with a sense of what am I going to get in return, many times I might be disappointed in that. And I would say, well, I didn't get enough. Or I didn't get anything. Or where was the thank you? Maybe you've opened a door for someone as they were walking into a restaurant in the store, and they just walked right past you expecting that this was your duty and never said thank you to you. And perhaps your sense was, well, I'm not going to do that again. Okay. And what the law of attraction tells us is that if that's your reaction to it, then you're going to continue to get people who aren't going to say thank you to you when you open the door. And so if you're looking for a return and you don't get one, and you have a judgment about that, for the most part, you'll continue to have more opportunities to work on that particular issue, because the law of attraction says you will bring those people into your life, the ones that are not grateful. And I'd encourage you to think about the notion that of this generosity from the law of attraction's perspective in reverse. Okay. So Mary got ill. She was not feeling well last Sunday, for those of you who know where's here. And she contacted me on Monday and said she wasn't going to be able to put the mental energy into preparing. And I had said to her, if you ever need a fallback, just let me know. I've been teaching communications classes for almost 50 years, so I think I can stand it in a week's notice. But the point about that is that it isn't just a generosity that Mary's offering for me to be able to come and speak. And it's not just a generosity for me to be able to give you the messages and the learnings that I've gotten. You've attracted me. The people that came today attracted me to hear this message. That's the way it works. And I attracted you as my audience to listen to what I have to say. So I ask you also to think about the reverse of the law of attraction, and that is when you offer something to others, such as the serva team today who was preparing the food for us, and those of you who brought food, that you, in a sense, have attracted the people that are going to come and bring food. Does that make sense? By saying this is what we want you to do, you're attracting the people that are going to come and bring food. And just like whoever the speaker happens to be, whether it was Sue and Dan who talked about the love and the Course in Miracles, or whether it was Bill last week who talked, or whomever it happens to be. I think Julie is going to be speaking next week or in the next couple. Whoever it is, the title of their topic is going to attract people who want to come and be the gift, have experienced the gift of the generosity. And it works both ways. The right people will show up, and she will be the right person to speak to the people that show up. And that's kind of how the generosity piece and the law of attraction fit together, because if your mentality and energy is of lack, then you will have lack. And if you think to yourself, well, I can only give this much of whatever it is, your energy, your money, your time, if I can only give this much, then that's all you're going to have the energy or time and money to give. But if you think, I want to give everything I can, then everything that you can give will show up for you. So you can be as generous as you would ever want to be, and not think of it as having to give away all of your riches or all of your time or all of your energy. I still support everyone who has boundaries. I think boundaries are important, because others will take advantage of you. And guess what will happen if you think people are going to take advantage of you, Doug? They will. People will show up who want to take advantage of you. But if you come from the premise that no one's going to take advantage of me, then you won't manifest someone who is going to take advantage of you. So we ask you to think about tithing when we have our services here. And each of you got your card. So I'm going to ask you to take your card and put it in your hand now. And I want you to read it to yourself silently. Close your eyes after you've read it and attempt to get in touch with the energy of that card. What that card is saying to you, because you each got exactly the right card. Now close your eyes and think about the message on your card. What we need to develop is a spirit of generosity that expresses itself in many ways, but all of the ways in which we can give are just ways of making ourselves available to help others. As Walt Whitman said, when I give myself. And that statement, I think, perfectly sums up the spirit of unconditional generosity. And so it is. Namaste.